We are in chapter 9, and last week we did verse number 22, which talks about a promise made by the Lord, a written contract, where he says that those who work for me, not that I need it, but who work in the world, dedicating their activities to me, serve me in the people of the world and constantly remember me, and their life becomes a constant remembrance and service and worship of the Lord, then he says, then I take care of their responsibilities. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. Whatever they need in life, I provide, and whatever they have, I maintain it. I make sure that they get what they need and they preserve. It does not mean that he's going to come and do your dishes or vacuum the floor. But the idea is that you do the work, and then whenever problems come or whenever situations come where you need a divine hand, he will be there. And such a person never has to worry about, oh, what's going to happen at my retirement? Who's going to take care of me? Because the Lord says, I take responsibility. And he says, I am running this whole universe without any help from you. And definitely I can take care of your one little life. But we get so worried, you know, oh, mera kya hoga, who will take care of me? So this beautiful shloka, I think everybody should read this 22nd shloka and memorize it and apply that in life when you find there are situations where you have any doubts that what will happen. The future, he says, I will take care of. And also it is very clear, if you do the right thing in the present, do what is good, the future is automatically taken care of. But it's even above and beyond that. And we heard last week how the Lord himself came in different forms to help his devotees. So that shloka, I think, for me, it's one of the ones in the Bhagavad Gita that has the most impact on me personally. And I would request everybody, the 22nd verse in the 9th chapter, to memorize it and read the commentary from the Blue Book of Swami Chinmayananda, because the commentary is very powerful. Yes.
What does it mean, Swami?
One is that you should constantly remember him. And secondly, once you do that, then there is no fear of the future. You have no fear that who will take care of. And anytime, in any situation in life, whether it's my personal or whether it's the mission or the business or the family or anywhere in life, you become fearless. I mean, you lose all worries. Because once you give everything to him, then you say, you are doing it, I am not doing it. So even that sense of doership gets reduced. Not that I have reached anywhere at that state, but by constantly applying that and thinking about it, it reduces your sense that I have done it. Because he's the one doing it. He's the one carrying me, carrying everything. You know, whether it's the mission, whether it's my practice, whether it's my home, whether it's my family, my children. You find his hand there everywhere once you dedicate to him. That's been my personal. And I have seen that in lives of many people who have been doing his work, to find that. It's very clear. There is a very, actually everything he is alone doing. You know, you and I are not doing anything. Right now I am speaking because he is in me. But we have this sense of ego that I am doing, or I am speaking, or I am so successful, or I am so good. So that I has to be reduced, and that can only come by constantly remembering that he's the doer, he's the one that is doing it. But I think it's one of the most beautiful shlokas. There are two or three others that are this powerful. You know, then there's one in the 18th chapter, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tva Sarva Papebhya Moksha Ishyami Ma Shucha. That also has, it is towards the end of the 18th chapter. That is also very nice. So there are a few shlokas like that. Actually, every shloka is beautiful. You can't say one is better than the other, but you know, some have more impact than others. So today we'll do verse number 23, chapter 9. Yepyanya devata bhaktaha yajante shraddhayanvitaha Tepi mameva kaunteya. yajantyavidhipurvakam. So he's now comparing in the 22nd verse, he said, those who worship me. Worship me does not mean Krishna in that particular form. One who worships the self, the consciousness, the all-pervading Brahman, the total consciousness, which is, here Krishna is identifying himself with that total consciousness that is within and without us, that is everywhere. So that consciousness, so he, in the 22nd verse, he says, they worship me. But here he says, how about somebody says, well, I worship Krishna, or I worship Shiva, or I, you know, have Jesus on the cross, and that's whom I worship, or Guru Nanak, or, you know, or anything, you know, some people worship different deities and different powers. So he says, what about them? You know, is that right or wrong? Is that okay to worship? So he says, yepi. So here Krishna answers that, yepi, they also, anya devata bhaktaha. Devata means the deities, anya. So one who worship the other deities, bhakta. Bhakta means devotees of the other deities. Yajante, they worship. Shraddhayan vitaha, with shraddha, with faith. As we have studied before, shraddha is not only blind faith, but faith accompanied by knowledge. When faith alone is there, okay, you know, I have faith in God, okay, that is good. That is good. But then when you have faith along with having read the Bhagavad Gita or the Bible or the, you know, the good teachings of the great saints, and they tell you who is God, what is his nature, how can I relate to him, and having met a guru and you see how that guru is applying this knowledge in his life, then that knowledge, shraddha, is not only blind but is accompanied by knowledge. And that's what they say, that if you only have shraddha or only have, say, faith, don't have knowledge, then it's like a bird flying with one wing. A bird cannot fly. But when a bird has two wings, then it can effortlessly go up into the sky. So the mind and intellect, both are our wings. And when the mind is reinforced with love, with faith, and the intellect with knowledge, then such a person very rapidly progresses to the higher path. So that's why he says, Shraddha, Shraddhaya Anvitaha. Anvitaha means totally endowed with, filled with Shraddha. Whatever deity you may worship, you know, any deity you may worship, Te Api, they also, Mam Eva Kaunteya, O Kaunteya, O Arjuna, they worship me. Krishna says, again, Krishna is not saying me as the blue boy, you know, I of Vrindavan, the one playing the flute. Krishna is in this, then he, that means you are saying that no matter what God you worship, then Krishna is the highest. He does not mean that. What he is saying is that he is identifying himself with Brahman, with that total consciousness, which is everywhere, that is within us, without us. So that consciousness alone they worship. But how do they worship me, that self, as yajanti? They worship avidhi purvakam. Avidhi purvakam means not exactly in the right way. Vidhi purvakam means they worship in the proper way. Avidhi purvakam means it is not fully right. It is not totally correct. So why does he call it avidhi purvakam? So we'll talk about that. So Swamiji in his commentary says, he says that what this shloka is saying, that it does not matter whom you worship, whether you worship Krishna with the flute or Shiva in meditation or Guru Nanak or Jesus or Buddha or Allah or even the formless. You say, I don't care for any forms. I don't want any forms. I worship the formless, total, all-pervading entity. He says, that's fine. Some people say, I worship space. You know, space, because space is all pervading. It is the closest to God. Or some people say, I worship the sun. You know, they get up in the morning and chant the Gayatri Mantra, Om Bhur Bhuvaswa. So it says it doesn't matter which deity. Some people, we have heard stories in our Puranas where people take a piece of stone and then just start worshipping that and offering flowers and water. And they invoke the Lord's presence and the Lord has appeared. So it says it doesn't matter which form of the Lord you worship, they all come to me, that Brahman, that total consciousness. Because as we said, the Brahman, the total consciousness, when working through the total mind or the samashti, becomes Ishvara, becomes the devatas. that they're different. You know, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, Saraswati, you know, Durga. It doesn't matter. They are all the manifestation of that total consciousness working through the total mind. And when the total consciousness works through the individual mind, it becomes the jiva or the limited being. But the Brahman is consciousness. So whether you say Paramatma or Jivatma, Paramatma is God and Jivatma is the individual. What is common? Atma. Atma, the consciousness, is common in all. It is one consciousness that is there in all the gods and goddesses. It is there in all the plants, birds, fish, animals, humans, stones, rocks. Everything is there, is pervaded by that one consciousness. So, this shows that that every path is open. Whether you take the path of Christianity or, you know, Islam or Hinduism or Buddhism or Sikhism, whether you worship, you know, whichever God you worship. And not only that, but in Hinduism, they also have different methods of, you know, of reaching the highest. You know, they don't say only one book or only one. You know, you can worship through karma yoga, through service. You can worship through bhakti yoga, path of love. You can worship through jnana yoga, the path of knowledge. Or hatha yoga, you know, the path of doing yogas, you know, where the people do yogic exercises and all that. The idea is that whatever path you choose, A, it should be suited to your personality. You know, somebody like is service oriented. He goes out and works. He says, I'm going to dig ditches and I'm going to bring, you know, wipe the tears of this, you know, sad people and serve them. So, you know, he's action oriented. So he doesn't want to sit in room and say Om Namah Shivaya. Om. No, he that's not his nature. He likes to go out and work. So he says, okay, work for me, the Lord says. Another person is very emotional, very loving, and the moment, you know, she starts thinking about the Lord, tears come to her eyes and she remembers the stories of how Krishna used to play the flute and how all those beautiful stories she remembers, and she feels that I was there in Gokul and I was there in Vrindavan. So her heart is filled with love for that little baby, the little child who was running around and, you know, stealing butter and all. All those beautiful stories make her excited. So they say, okay, you choose the path of love, you know, because that is your nature. There is nothing wrong with that. Somebody said, these stories are all useless. I want knowledge. You know, I am a knowledge person. I'm intellectual. And nowadays this becomes an ego also, that I am an intellectual. I want to know more. I want to study. Okay, go study. Go sit in front of a teacher, but go with humility. Sit at the feet of a teacher and read the books and learn the knowledge. And through the knowledge, you come to know that I am that consciousness. There is one consciousness that is all me. Everybody is me. And then he sits and meditates upon that. Beautiful. Nothing wrong with that. Or another person says, oh, no, I want to do the yogic exercises, and through yoga and through pranayama and through all those, you know, and then there are some people who sit for hours and then sit for months and years in, you know, in the cold. And that's good too. He says, whatever path you choose, choose me as the goal, as the consciousness, and do not become fanatical about it. See, that is the problem. When the path becomes fanaticism, like a person says, Buddha alone is the powerful. All other prophets were useless. Or Christ alone is the way, or, you know, Krishna is superior to all the others. You know, once you start doing that, and then you start putting people of other religions down and criticizing them and saying that they are inferior, and, you know, that is when the problem arises. So they say that no matter what path you choose, A, it should be a path with Shraddha, faith and love and total dedication. And it should be without fanaticism. Now, how can you say that all the devtas have the same power, you know, that is Mother Durga or Saraswati or Jesus? How are they all? Where do they get their power from? So Swamiji, I was listening to his commentary, Swami Chinmayananda, and he says, it's like you approach the government. Now, what is the government of the U.S.? You ask him, what is the government of the U.S.? Government extends in the whole country, right? Yeah, Washington is the capital, but is the government of the U.S. in here? Yeah, it is in Bakersfield, it is in Louisiana, it is everywhere, extends everywhere from sea to shining sea, you know, from the Canadian border to the Mexican border. But if you want to say you have to get a build an industry and you want to start a new project, so you go to the industrial minister, or you want to have some changes in the agriculture policy, so you go to the agriculture minister. So you go to Washington, D.C. and you submit your application to the agriculture minister. Now, the agriculture minister is an ordinary human being. But how did he get his power? From the president. Because the president, when he got elected, he said, okay, I'm going to appoint a defense secretary and agriculture and education and health. So they all got their power from the president. Now, how did the president get the power? From all the people. Because every 4 years, he or she stands for election, and the one who gets the most votes from the people. So it is the people, the total power of the whole country that is symbolized in the president, and he is the one got the power. And from that power, then he delegates the power to the other authorities, defense secretary, commerce, industries, and all that. So when I'm invoking the agriculture minister and asking for some changes in the agriculture policy, or when I'm approaching the defense minister for a contract, you know, say I'm a big company and I want a contract, whom am I approaching? I'm approaching the United States, the power of the United. But it is avidhi purvakam. I cannot directly go to that United States government because it is huge. So I go to the one department that I need. So that is what they say, that the Lord that you worship, whoever it be, Vishnu or Shiva or Krishna or Mother Goddess or whatever, they all get their power from that one Brahman, one consciousness. And it is okay if you worship one aspect of the Lord, because it becomes very difficult to worship the all-pervading Brahman consciousness, who is formless, who cannot be thought of, who cannot be described, who cannot be seen, indriya gocharam. It cannot be seen with the eyes, it cannot be heard by the ears, he cannot be described by the speech, he cannot be thought of. So how am I to think about him? So that's why the Lord has given us these beautiful forms. You know, you sit for meditation, you think of Shiva in meditation, or you love the Mother Goddess, then you think about her love and compassion and kindness. So the form of the Lord is easier to relate to. And that is why they say use the form to go to the formless. Use the one to go to the totality, that there is one consciousness who has appeared as all these different forms. So worship them with love and devotion, but do not become fanatical and do not forget that there is one entity that is in me and that is outside me, that is everywhere. Another example Swamiji gives in his tape, which is very interesting. He says, like, suppose you are speeding. You know, you're driving 55 in a 30-mile zone, you know, which we do a lot. And the cop comes with his lights and he stops you. And now, you know, he gets down from the car and then you say, oh, officer, I'm very sorry. I was in a rush. I had to, you know, whatever reason you give. Now, the cop is writing your ticket. Now, he's an ordinary person, right? He's an ordinary man. But why does he have this power over you to stop you and give you a ticket? Because he got the power from the government, you know, from the state government. He's a CHP officer. So he got his power from Sacramento, so when you are invoking him, and then, you know, like here in this country, it doesn't happen as much, but in certain other countries, you know, if your fine is $200, you slip him $20 or $40, you know, or rupees, or whatever the currency is, and he will let you go. He'll say, it's okay, don't do that again. So he pockets the money, so he doesn't write you a ticket. And so you got away. Instead of paying $200, you paid only $40, and you said, oh, who's going to waste my whole day going to the court and sitting in front of a judge? So you paid him the money, and you got away from the ticket, and he got the money, he pocketed it. So how did you approach him? Avidhi purvakam. Not in the right way. You approach that power of the federal government or the state government in the guise of that CHP officer, but you approached it avidhi purvakam, not the right way. So that is what this shloka means, that the whatever deity you invoke, you are invoking the consciousness. But it is important to know what you're doing, to have the right knowledge that while I'm invoking, I am invoking the higher. So right knowledge can only come from contact with the teacher. When you do things with the wrong knowledge, then your actions are wrong. This reminds me of a little joke. There was this young boy who was about 3 or 4, and he had just learned to go to the bathroom. And so he would come around loudly say, "Mom, I want to go pee," or "I want to go to the bathroom," or "I want to go party." You know, all these loud things he would be yelling. So mother says, "You know, it's not polite to be telling all this." So he said, "Well, what should I say?" She said, "I'll give you a code. Tell me I want to sing. And when you tell me I want to sing, then I'll understand what you want to do and I'll take you to the bathroom. Don't go around using all these other words. You know, it doesn't sound nice." So for the boy learned it very well. So, "Mommy, I need to sing." So mommy would take him to the bathroom, and it went on for a while. It so happened one night he was spending the weekend at the grandparents' house. And there the boy woke up at 2 a.m. "Grandpa, Grandpa." He said, "What?" He said, "I want to sing." So grandpa said, "What? 2 o'clock in the morning you want to sing? Go to sleep. You can sing in the morning." He said, "No, Grandpa, I really, really, really have to sing right now." So grandpa said, "Okay, don't disturb Grandma. Just sing quietly in my ear." Gana, gana, you know. Mere kaan mein ga de. Chupcha. So when you don't have the right knowledge, then your actions become avidhipurvakam. So that is what the idea is, that when you work with the right knowledge, then your actions are correct. Another way to look at this shloka can be looked at in many, many different ways, is that when you are working in the world and you are trying to get, you know, I'm procuring this and getting that and acquiring this and I'm successful in this and I'm, you know, studying this. So all the time, who am I invoking? What is the power that I'm using? It is the Lord Himself. Whether I am successful in my business or whether I'm successful in my studies or whether I, you know, our children, we tell them, you know, you have to do well in your studies. Yeah, if you do well in your studies, but then we always say, be always grateful to the Lord, because it is He who has given you the ability to think. You know, or our child does very good in sports and he runs. So before, you know, if he's going for a competition, you always tell him, you know, make sure you pray before you go. Or if they're going for an exam or going for finals or going for what, you always tell them, you know, just go into the prayer room, spend just a few seconds and invoke the Lord's grace. And we tell that to our children, but then when we do something and we become successful, then that little ego arises very quickly. You know, I did so much, or I am such a wonderful person. And anything I do, whether I'm cooking a nice dish and somebody praises it, or I am, you know, or whatever, or somebody, you know, and people get so proud about what their abilities are or what their knowledge is, or even about how they look. You know, somebody says, "You look so nice," and I, you know, we become arrogant. But who is the one that gave me this body, this beautiful body? Who is the one that gave me the ability to work? Who is the one that gave me the knowledge? And even when we meet a guru or when we meet a teacher, one always has to be thankful to the Lord for sending that guru or sending that teacher and for sending me to that guru. That's what they say. That even to meet a spiritual teacher, you have to have done good karmas in your previous life. That even that the fact that you are exposed to this knowledge and you are sitting and studying, that also is the Lord's grace. So one has to be always grateful. I personally feel that through contact with Swami Chinmayananda and Tejomayananda and Ishwarananda and all the other acharyas who come, whatever little I know is because of having met them and having listened to them. And when they come, I always try to spend time with them, maybe go for a walk or sit down. And so that, because questions come to everybody and doubts come and things are not clear, because this knowledge is a very subtle knowledge. It's a subjective knowledge. It is a knowledge about who I am. You know, about the world you can study. You know, you can go on the internet and study about, or medicine, you can study books, or engineering, or law, or economics or finance or architecture or computers. Yeah, there are a lot of, but this subtle knowledge that who I am and who is this God and what is my relationship is not that easy. And people say, I can pick up the books and read. Why do I need a guru? But in my opinion, a guru is more required in this than even in, you know, like when you start playing golf. And, you know, you need a coach, right? You cannot just start hitting the ball. People take golf lessons and, or they want to learn dance or they want to learn music. You know, like a lot of our kids learn music and dance and golf and computers and anything. We send our kids to school to study architecture or chemistry or physics. So this knowledge is even more subtle than all the other knowledge. And a guru is very important who can mold your mind and change it in the direction, because our mind is all the time out in the world. And we have to change the direction of our mind. So the spirituality is nothing but just reversing. Instead of thinking all the time about the world, start thinking about the Lord, about me, the Lord that is within me. And even that idea that there is a guru and that I should study from him comes from the Lord himself. So one has to be grateful that, oh Lord, I am so grateful to you, for you have given us these wonderful books, you have given us the knowledge, you have sent, you know, great prophets like Swami Chinmayananda and Shankaracharya and Jesus and Buddha and all of these great prophets who have come and brought your knowledge to us. And so that is what he says, that even there, when you are working in the world, you are invoking me. I am the one that is giving the power, but you are invoking me, avidhi purvakam. You are just invoking me for worldly things. So that again is me and my. So this shloka tells us that it does not matter whom you worship, it does not matter what, but do it with love and devotion. Swami Chinmayananda says, he says, it is vain to argue which form of the Lord to worship. He says, worship him in any form. It is the sincerity of devotion that counts. How sincere you are in your devotion, in your love. So this is a very nice shloka. Please, anybody has anything they want to add or?
Things which you get from them, they are not that sustainable as they come from you.
Extension of that is that when you approach the Lord, what do you go there for? You know, when you go to the temple, are you going just to say, oh, my son is studying in, you know, my son is in college. I know he didn't study. I know he wasted all his time in fooling around. But Lord, you know, you are almighty. Make sure he passes with A. So we go for that. Or you say, you know, Lord, you know, my business is not doing good. The economy is bad. The stock market is bad. Please make sure my stocks go up. Or, you know, or health, you know, I am not keeping good health, or my son or my husband or my wife, you know. So when you go to approach him and ask him for those things, whether it's money, power, health, you know, then that is what he will give. But a wise person says, I want you. I'm coming to the temple. I'm not coming. Yes, I know those things. You already know that. He already knows that my child is sick or my business is not doing good or my stocks are down. He already knows that. I don't need to tell him. So when I go to the temple, I say, I'm coming because I want you. I want you and you and you alone. And when that becomes the goal, then he gives you that. And another place he says, whatever way you approach me, whatever, I make that shraddha strong, that faith strong. If your faith is in money and you want a lot of money, I'll give you money. You want a lot of power, I'll give you power. You want success, fame, name, I'll give you that. But if you want me, I'll give you myself. So that is what, you know, that's why these great saints, you know, Mirabai and Tukaram and, you know, Narsi Mehta and Jesus and all of these, they said, I do not want anything else in the world, I want you. And that's what Mirabai said, Mere to Giridhar Gopal, Dusara na koi, Jaake sir mor mukut, Mero pati soi. So he is my husband, I only want him, I do not want, and she had all the kingdom, she was a queen. But she said, I do not want the palace, I do not want the kingdom, I want you. And when you say, I want you, then he gives himself. So that is what. You know, what are you asking for? That is very important. No, he doesn't give us the problems. He doesn't make us unhappy. We make ourselves unhappy and we create our own problems. See, God has given us the freedom to choose. You can either choose him or choose the world. And when you choose the world, then the world has its plus and minuses both. When you want in the world, some things you will get, some things you will not get, somewhere you'll be successful, somewhere you'll be failure. And then you will be one day happy, one day unhappy. But when you choose him, then you are constantly happy because no matter what happens in the world, I have found him. And once I have found him, then nothing in the world can make me unhappy because I have got the highest. I have already become one with the Lord, and then no matter whether you crucify me or whether you give me poison, like Mirabai was given poison, she cheerfully drank it. She said, if the Lord wants me to drink poison, I'll drink it. And the poison miraculously didn't harm her. There's the Prahlad whom we heard about. He was thrown off the cliff and he just kept chanting Vishnu, Vishnu. And Vishnu came himself and in a soft bed held him in his hands. He was thrown off a cliff. So the point is that the problems are created by ourselves, by our own karmas and whatever so. And he wants us to be happy. That's why he gives us these books. That's why he sent his prophets. But we don't choose him and we choose the worldly things. And then in that process of acquiring, I want more power. It doesn't matter how many people I cheat. I want more wealth. So it doesn't matter. I get money that I don't deserve. And I want success, so I trample over the feet of others. So when you do all these horrible actions, then you serve the consequences of those actions. So the only difference thing he did with humans was he gave us an intellect to choose. And he also sent us the prophets with the knowledge. But when we did not choose the right path and when we did wrong things, then we are suffering. And why is that? Because of our selfish vasana. Because we have negative tendencies, and with these selfishness, we work in the world trying to get more and more and more. Doesn't matter the means. See, they say the means is more important than the goal. But we focus on the goal. It doesn't matter whatever means. But if you are using the right means, then it's okay to try and be successful, to try and do well. But one has to have the right means. And so the problems come. He is not giving us problems. We are creating our own problems. Because of our actions and because of wrong understanding. Avidhi purvakam, working in the world with wrong. Right. Right. Thank you. Yeah. Now, Swami Chinmayananda, one place he says, what happens to you is destiny and how you meet it is free will. Is free will. Whatever happens to you is destiny, whatever from the past karma. But whether you accept it and fix it and move on, or you keep on crying, that is your choice. Right. But again, does not mean that you accept disaster passively. If a disaster came, if I can work, if I can help, go out and help and try to improve the lot of the people, but with the right understanding. Yes. So constantly remember him as the life principle. And we shall continue this next week. Thank you. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.